If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I got one.
Here's John Williams.
Really proud of it, too. It's the 107. I'll tell you what it is in just a bit. Hi, it's John Williams. Steve Cochran was right. He called today...
Lord have mercy.
Stupid. This is a stupid day. If somebody was going, all right, here on Earth, we'll make weather for people. This would be, what a bad idea. I'm sitting in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue looking at people who have sad umbrellas and rain-drenched black coats, and they're just fighting this lousy weather. It's going to get a little bit better this week, but I guess this is kind of what happens here on Earth. You have a whole bunch of sunny days, and you get the occasional ones like this. I like the other kind better. So I don't want to start the show with a non sequitur, but I think we will. We play a little contest on this show called the non sequitur of the day. On occasion, if you can tell us what the non sequitur is about, you win a Lou Malnati's pizza from one of their thousands and thousands of area locations. So we play the clip, and then as soon as you think you know what it is, you just call or text 312-981-7200. Call 312-981-7200. We'll start with the non-sequitur so that we can then just talk a little bit more about it.
It's your non-sequitur of the day.
It has a jingle.
Come on, it's time to play. Non-sequitur.
There's low and then there's this.
It's your non-sequitur of the day.
Thank you, Bill Leff. So what was that? Bill said, what did he say again? Hit it, Elif.
There's low and then there's this.
Bill Leff with his friend Wendy, and Steve Bertrand was there too. We're talking about something earlier today on WGN Radio, and Bill said...
There's low and then there's this.
What was it that was so low that Bill had to call it out? Call me now, 312-981-7200. First person with the right answer gets a Lou Malnati's pizza. I was listening to that conversation, as I most often do, and I just thought, no kidding. I mean, I knew vaguely about the story, but I didn't pay that much attention to it. And then I heard their show, and I said, well, I got to say or do something about this. So first the question is, what were they talking about? You get a Lou Malnati's pizza if you can answer it correctly for me. Barb says she can. Hey, Barb, it's John. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Thanks for listening. So what was so low Bill couldn't believe it?
There was a young girl suffering from cancer who had a picture of Rizzo on her hospital window, and someone stole it.
You believe that? Can you believe that?
It was terrible.
I did not do this, but I was going to look up what the value of it is, right? Because... an autographed picture of Anthony Rizzo isn't the Holy Grail. There's probably 10,000 of them out there by now. I'll bet it's worth $20, you know? I mean, really, do you need $20 so bad that you'll steal it from a kid fighting brain cancer?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Well, I have something to say about that, and we've done something about that. But first of all, I want to say thank you for calling and listening, and you get yourself a Lou Malnati's pizza on us, okay?
Great, thank you.
That was your non sequitur of the day.
All right, hold on, Elif will talk to you.
For the winners, I say hooray, non sequitur.
So I was listening to that, and Bill and Wendy and Steve Bertrand go, well, we sure hope that Anthony Rizzo finds out about this and he does something about it. We called Anthony Rizzo's agent, and we said, hey, have you guys heard about this? It's downstate Illinois. I don't want to go on at great length because I know a lot of you know this story, but it's a... little 12-year-old Highland, Illinois girl. She's in her second battle with brain cancer at St. Louis Children's Hospital in Highland, Illinois. In 2016, Abby Schrage, S-C-H-R-A-G-E, was diagnosed with brain cancer. She had brain tumors. She beat it. The cancer returned. She's been in a hospital. They kept the picture on the windowsill behind the curtain. Some family members or friends showed up. Her mom opens up the curtain to say, look, here's the Anthony Rizzo picture. And, of course, Anthony Rizzo beat cancer himself as a kid. So what a nice thing for him to do, and what a great inspiration for the little girl. The picture was gone. The mom says, no questions asked, just return the picture. You know, they got security cameras out the wazoo at places these days. you got to believe that somewhere somebody is on a video right now and they'll find out who this lowlife is. We called Anthony Rizzo's agent and emailed Abby Suarez, and we said, do you know about this? And if not, could we maybe do something to get Anthony to come on or just ensure that this little girl in downstate Illinois gets the replacement picture? And Abby Suarez, who's actually described as his executive director, said to my producer, Elif, in an email, hi, Elif, thanks for reaching out. Anthony heard about the story late last night after someone posted on his Twitter page. I spoke with him this morning, and he already had sent out a new photo and an autographed jersey to the girl, which should arrive to the hospital tomorrow to be personally delivered to her. Thanks, signed Abby. So that's real stand-up of Mr. Rizzo. If you know the Schrage family, I guess don't say anything. Let it be a surprise. But the autographed jersey and the photograph evidently are on the way. I'm only chuckling because we've heard of some great acts of generosity lately where the items don't always arrive on time, but I'm willing.
Okay, let's not do that.
I'm willing to hope and believe that it'll arrive there. So that's the end of that story. Listen, I used to pledge on the Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon as a kid, my allowance money, my piggy bank money. But I didn't have a checking account. And the transfer of funds to my parents and then my parents to, where was the address? It was before the internet. We had to find an envelope. I don't know that we always followed through on our best intentions. My mother has often said, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, honey. Well, that's a nice reminder. I was just thinking about that, though. You say, okay, so like, if you had to prioritize the people, and you hear about this sometimes, that are, you talk about the lowest of the low, the people who steal flowers from graves and cemeteries. You have a display there. You have flowers. Sometimes they're artificial flowers. Sometimes they're natural flowers growing there in a pot, whatever. And people steal those. They'll even steal the vase. And you think, here's a person that wants flowers. A person that wants flowers is a person that wants beauty in their life. It's a sympathetic or empathetic person, isn't it? Because they want flowers. Bad guys don't want flowers. Nice people want flowers. So then what kind of twisted mind goes to a cemetery and steals flowers from somebody's grave? I could see robbing a bank, but I can't see going and stealing flowers. I'll bet most bank robbers don't spend money on flowers anyway. So I would say people that steal them from military grave sites, there's a special ring in hell for you. People that steal flowers from graves generally, I suppose, are right there. People that steal from churches and schools, little league teams. You'll hear starting around, I don't know, Thanksgiving, somebody stealing a Salvation Army kettle. I mean, shoot, that money, if you're that low, if you're that desperate, you should just go to the Salvation Army and they'll give you a hot meal. But some people will steal those. Another thing that you just see more and more of on the news these days, and I don't exactly understand it, are the people that will steal packages from FedEx, say, off people's doorsteps. I understand that you want to steal from somebody and then you'll make money. But really, think of all the work that requires. Because say it's clothes, or say it's a gadget or a thing that either won't fit you or that you don't want. So now you got their gadget or their thing. Now what do you got to do? Well, now you got to go to Craigslist and start an account and you got to sell it. Is that what those people do with those things? I don't understand it. It's such a crime of convenience and it is so inconsiderate to that other person. You know, they're waiting for the package. Did it arrive? Yes, it's there. No, it's not. How do they replace it? How do they prove that it was stolen? But people sometimes will just walk right up, grab the package, and then just stroll off like it's thrown, and they don't even know what's inside.
Didn't you ever play ducks at the carnival? You just grab a duck. You didn't know what the prize was underneath, but it could be really good.
Yeah, it could be. No, I'm sure that's it. I'm sure they open it up and go, holy cow, a drone, right? I would steal from your front step if there was a drone in there. but it might be like
pet diapers.
I know, a size 8 dress, no thank you. The least you could do is return it and say, come on, get some better crap. Oh, this is terrible. And then, of course, the people that steal potted plants from people's lawns. This isn't a conversation for the fall, but you do have that very, again, twisted breed of people that will steal your flowers, your hostas.
That happened to me one time.
Oh, God, yeah. I think everybody's got a story like that. What happened to you?
We had lived on Belden, and Dayton, and had a... I lifted all the bricks out of the courtyard, you know, and put in, built a garden there.
Oh, nice.
Planted all these flowers, and someone dug up a couple of the plants that had just been in the ground like a day or two. Just, I woke up the next morning, and they were gone.
You know, I had this conversation once upon a time, and somebody said that they had rolled out the sod, and the next day, it was gone. Somebody rolled it back up like so much shag carpeting, put it in the back of a pick-em-up truck, and drove away with their lawn.
You want to get
stole their lawn.
You got to do it before the roots settle in.
That's labor. That's heavy lifting, Jack. You go to the people's house and go, hey, did you steal my lawn? And, you know, they've got this great lawn. You know, I think that's my lawn. Oh, yeah, we'll prove it. You know, all right, well, let's look in the back seat of your car. Oh, a lot of mud here. Huh, that's weird.
Well, I that's what I did myself.
If you're so desperate for a lawn, really, you would steal somebody else's? The one type of criminal who I'm not interested in prosecuting, and there are some, but the people that I just find so pathetic are the people that are at convenience stores stealing diapers or baby food. I don't want to go after those people. They are on the low end of the spectrum of people I'm interested in going after. But somebody that would steal an Anthony Rizzo photo, props to Rizzo for hearing about it. And without it, sounds like his agents even prodding him just knew, this is what I got to do. Oh, and by the way, here's an autographed jersey. Hey, Dave, this is John. You're on the air. What did you want to say?
Dave here.
Hey, Dave, you're on the air.
I just figured, first of all, Bill O'Reilly is blaming God, okay? Well, first of all, back in the beginning, the devil rebelled so much that God gave him his own country. And then with the person who would steal an autographed photo from a hospital room.
No.
I think they go in the same place.
I'm not going to cast judgments on Bill O'Reilly's soul. I saw that headline. I didn't click through on the story. I knew that he was outraged. I read the quote from Bill O'Reilly saying, I have explosive material, evidence that this isn't true, blah, blah, blah. You all are going to be sorry. You picked the fight with the wrong fella. But I don't know. What was his complaint about God? I don't understand that.
Why didn't he just say, you know, in the 70s, the devil made me do it, you know?
I'm hanging up the phone on you now, Dave.
Okay, thank you.
Go away. Yeah, I didn't follow that version. There's so many ridiculous stories these days. You can only... In fact, you should only click through on so much.
He said he had explosive evidence that exonerated him or something.
Yeah, right.
But he paid the settlement last year.
I don't know who I'm mad or at. I don't know if I'm angrier at Bill O'Reilly, granted, or Fox for then giving him a $100 million deal after he or they, you know, it's kind of a shell game in that case. He pays the $32 million.
But he's threatening to reveal explosive evidence.
Yeah, that's going to exonerate him. Boy, you'll
after he's already paid the settlement.
Well, I don't ask me to make sense of this stuff, Steve. I can't. You know who else has got it? Just as I've been thinking today about people who have stolen things and how... God, how do you sleep at night? You're sitting there like smelling the pretty flowers or looking at your awesome Anthony Rizzo photo, which is signed to, oh, wait, it's not you. I mean, does there come a point where you just, where the sort of the ickiness of it starts to weigh on you, sort of more than the joy of having nice flowers or sod or a picture of Anthony Rizzo? I wonder how that works. And you wonder about the treasurer from Dixon, Illinois, who over more than a decade was stealing about $4 or $5 million a year from him. She ended up stealing $50+ million from Little Dixon, Illinois. You know, they made a documentary about that called All the Queen's Horses because she was trading and showing in quarter horses. And I guess she was well-to-do because she was stealing from them. But people in Dixon, Illinois said, we didn't even know we had $50 million. How do you get $50 million out of Dixon, Illinois? Well, you do so just a little bit at a time. Actually, you do a few million a year at a time. She was able to pull it off. There's a brand new movie about that, which is coming out, I believe, this month, called All the Queen's Horses. It's 122. There's a really nice postscript in the story about the Hope Academy High School football team, which St. Francis High School and Bishop McNamara said they would not play. They said that where Hope Academy is on the west side, it's too dangerous. People get shot over there. We're not going to come and play the game, which is on our schedule. We talked to the president of Hope Academy last week. Well, there's a nice new wrinkle to this story in a minute. By the way, so we were telling you the story about that little girl, Abby Schrage, from downstate Illinois, who had the Anthony Rizzo photo. Her mom, Jill, is going to join us right after 2 o'clock, right after 2. So, you know, this is what happens when something bad happens. Sometimes more good happens than bad happened. And so in the grand scheme of things, the scales of good outweigh bad. I think that happens all of the time. Somebody, there's a shooting, there's a tragedy, there's a something, and you're reminded of evil, but also the greater good. And so this will be maybe a small example of that. That'll be a little after 2. What else is I needing to do here, Ms. Garris? You want me to read something? Yeah, what am I supposed to read here? La-dee-dee, la-dee-da. I do not see it, so it's not going to get read right now, I'll tell you that. So here's that story that I was talking about, Steve. It says here, you know the story about Hope Academy in East Garfield Park on the west side of the city. They have 2 games left on their schedule. They were with St. Francis High School and Bishop McNamara. In their editorial today, I didn't know this, the Chicago Tribune wrote about it, and they said that, you know, we talked to the principal or the president of the school. He's upset that these other schools won't come to his place and play their away games at his school because they're afraid that they're going to get shot. There was a shooting nearby. He said, not in 13 years of this program's history has anybody ever been shot at or around the games. Yes, we live on the west side. It sucks. He didn't say that, but I'm sure they all wish life was better there. But you can come here and play a football game.
There was a game earlier in the season, the reporting I read, where the gunfire was, you know, pretty close and the players on the field all hit the ground.
Right. I saw the video of that or the pictures of it. The guys diving down. It was kind of a surreal scene.
So, full disclosure, I went to Bishop McNamara High School.
One of the schools that's not playing.
Actually, and was the first, I think, to report this story that they were going to cancel a couple weeks ago or last week. If you're a parent, you know, it's a tough decision, and I know that I talked to people down there, and the parents, they kind of put it to a vote, and the parents voted, most of them, that they didn't want their kids to go up and play there.
Yeah. He said, you know, that's not very Christian. This is a small Catholic, or not Catholic, a Christian school league. And
I think it's Catholic league.
Is it a Catholic league?
I think so.
Well, so, in fact, in the Tribune editorial, they quote St. Francis, Steve. He talked about doing the impossible. He said, quote, start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you're doing the impossible. Thank you, St. Francis.
For so much.
Well, now that's a nice saying. We're not poo-pooing that, are we?
No.
That wasn't dismissive, was it, Steve?
No, thank you, St. Francis, for so much more. No, I meant that. But
didn't sound like
that. Well, I did. I went to St. Francis. Not really, I'm lying.
You went to Bishop McNamara. Here's what the Chicago Tribune said. Chicago Hope Academy is one of those good things, a racially diverse 200-student Christian college prep school founded in 2005 by Chicago business people. It has sent graduates to Princeton, Columbia, Penn, Brown, Notre Dame, Naval Academy, other respected institutions. When St. Francis and Bishop McNamara bailed, they didn't hurt the criminals who afflict the community. They hurt the kids striving for success in academics and athletics. The good news here is that not everyone was afraid to come. A group of Bishop McNamara alumni made the trip to host a cookout before the teacher-student touch football game, which was held in place of the canceled one. They also brought a check for $10,000, and they lived to tell the tale. The Illinois High School Athletic Association imposed no punishment on the 2 schools that went back on their word. Any reimbursement for costs would have to be requested by Chicago Hope, they say. you were going to say.
Well, I know the guy. I know very well the guy who did that, and I'm not surprised at all. Bill Smith.
Good for him.
Yeah, it's great for him.
Good for them.
A little snarky, I think, from the Tribune. I'm sorry if I had a kid, and all it was a Friday evening football game, and 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before, people had dove to the ground because of gunfire. I think there might be more important things, and I'm not going to judge the people who thought that was a bad idea.
You see who's also victimized by this is
the kids who live there, absolutely. And I know they tried to find a neutral. I talked to the principal at Mac, and it sounds like I'm advocating for them. I'm sorry if it does. But
it's all right.
I happen to know that part of the story because I talked to them, and they told me that they also tried to play at a different time.
The school, Hope Academy, said we're not interested in moving it around to accommodate their unnecessary fears.
Right.
He said we could have played a day game. We could have played a weekend game. No, it was a Friday night game. It's as scheduled. They would not move it.
So it seems as if one school was trying to accommodate and the other one wasn't. I mean, I feel terrible for the boys, but I, as a parent, I'm a little aren't you a little sympathetic to that too? Or is it you just completely an unfounded fear?
No, I get your point.
I mean, it's not like you're making up stories.
There actually was
a situation that did happen.
I know that. Look, people get shot on the Eisenhower, and we drive that all the time. I have the advantage of being more courageous with your children. You know, I'm a third person on this. So I go, well, of course you guys should do it. It'll be fine, and everybody will be better for it. That will be a good story. But that's not my kid I'm putting on the bus, waving goodbye to him as he drives to the west side of Chicago. So I don't know what the honest thing is for me to say about that, Steve. Some Senate Republicans are in the habit of having a luncheon on Tuesdays of the first Tuesday of the month or the last Tuesday, whatever this is. President Trump was at that luncheon today with Mitch McConnell and this guy, Senator Corker, today.
They're going to talk tax reform, right?
Well, what they were not going to talk about was the sniping the two of them have been doing at each other. The president called him a loser and a lightweight, and he doesn't like him, and Corker doesn't like the president. He said that the White House is now an adult daycare center. So both of them are firing back at each other. They say all of that didn't come up at the lunch. But this did. A protester was able to get close enough to the president that he threw Russian flags at Donald Trump and shouted things at him. He was removed. They all had lunch, and we'll see what happens as a result. It's 1:43. On CNN the other day, by a woman named Nicole Stamp, there was a really interesting essay, What Decent Men Can Do in Response to #MeToo. Nicole joins us on WGN Radio. Nicole, it's John Williams. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
I'm getting a fast education about you. You're on TV in Canada. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
Am I able to see you here in the United States?
Yeah. I have a little part on a show called The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I'm actually in a movie that's coming out tomorrow that it's not going to screen. It's screening in Canada, and it's available for purchase on digital download in the States. It's called Carmilla the Movie, and it's based on a Canadian web series that has 70 million views worldwide. So it's got a bit of a following.
Well, then make a movie. Make a movie about that. This is my advice. Make a movie about that, for goodness sakes.
Thanks. Yeah, it's not bad advice at all. It's a movie. The story is about teenage lesbian vampire couple that meet in university and basically have to solve all these sort of supernatural mysteries together. And I think the reason that it's been so widely received is that it normalizes queer relationships for young people. Huh. Often you find the queer character is like a sidekick friend who gets murdered or has a really traumatic coming out story. In the Carmilla universe, most of the characters are queer. It's not a big deal, and they just get onto it and try to fight the demigod.
Oh, and by the way, they're vampires, too. That's funny.
Well, one's a vampire. There's one vampire. Carmilla is a vampire.
Got it.
It's a bit like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but for an LGBTQ young audience. And so it's resonated really well with that group. And 70 million views worldwide. It's been translated to 20 languages. And the movie comes out tomorrow, and I'm excited.
Speaking of being widespread, what's the circulation been of your essay from CNN?
So this essay started as a Facebook post. because the day of all of the Me Too posts, it was last Sunday, my whole Facebook was just flooded with Me Too, Me Too, Me Too. And I have a number of Me Too stories myself. And amid all of these people saying Me Too, I saw this group of men saying, oh my God, how can I help? And these are men that I'm friends with, and I like them, and I respect them, and I think they're good people. And they're asking, what can I do? And I thought, well, I have a couple ideas of what you can do. So I wrote a Facebook post detailing some things that decent guys can do to help make the climate better for the women around them.
Yeah.
Friends started saying, can I share this? So I made it public, and by the next day, it had been shared 40,000 times, and as of now, it's been shared over 70,000 times. CNN wrote to me and asked if they could, if I could revamp it for their website. So I did. So now it's on the CNN.com homepage.
Yeah.
They've tweeted it out.
Yeah.
And, so I'm still getting lots of messages and comments about it. So I think the circulation at this point, is pretty broad because CNN reaches a big audience.
So let's go over some of these in a minute. On a phone line, Nicole Stamps piece in the Facebook page, but also, on CNN right now has things that men can do to help in response to the hashtag MeToo effort. MeToo, of course, coming on the heels of the revelation that Harvey Weinstein appears to have been a serial philanderer or assaulter. And other women were stepping up and saying hashtag MeToo. So let's just sprint through some of these, can we?
Yeah, please.
So you said, practice this phrase, that's not cool. Say it to other men who are saying disrespectful things to or about women. You said, signal boost female voices. If you're sharing an article about a social issue, find one written by a woman if it's about a woman. Same goes for other groups. Boost articles about race by indigenous, black, or people of color, and articles about disability by writers with disabilities. There's a revolutionary slogan you point out, nothing about us without us. And then you said this, amplify women's voices at work. Speak up. If a woman's contributions are being dismissed, say that's what Monique said. You know, advocate for the ladies when they say something. And then this, be mindful of how you introduce women, particularly at work functions. At medical conferences, you note, women introduce male doctors as doctor 95% of the time, but men introduce female doctors as doctor only 49% of the time. You also said don't mention appearance when introducing female colleagues. This is the lovely Janet. Oh, God, Nicole, how many times have I heard? How many times have I done that? You want to pay somebody a compliment, and introducing them, you'll say, here's the lovely, and it's a female. But we don't do that to guys, do we?
Right. And I recognize that the impulse behind that, I'm sure, is complimentary. But I think if you look at the effect that it has, it ends up downplaying the woman's credentials and subtly telling other people that what they should focus on is Janet's appearance as opposed to the fact that Janet is your department head.
I guess that's what it's doing. And all we wanted to do is point out that not only is she brilliant and the head of the department in your example, but also that she's lovely, too. But now that's gratuitous or condescending, isn't it?
Well, personally, I would rather be recognized for my professional accolades than for my looks.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
yeah.
If I'm standing in front of that person, they can draw their own conclusions about my looks, but they need to know what I've done so they know how they should speak to me.
Well, what is that impulse in guys, guys of a certain age maybe? What is it about the impulse to do that? Because I don't think they always mean harm when they do that.
I certainly don't think people mean harm when they do that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a guy who does that. It would be hard for me to read into somebody else's motives.
Yeah.
I do think that in some instances, certainly not all instances, in some instances, I've found that, just to give you an example, I was in a taxi the other day, and I asked the driver to take a specific route, and he didn't want to take that route. But I had an app open on my phone. I could see the traffic. I knew this route very well. And so I asked kind of firmly, can we please take this route? And he didn't like that. But it's also, I'm paying for the cab ride.
Yeah, so right.
Job. I mean,
you're working for me.
I need to do what I ask. So he said, fine, sweetheart. Now, in that situation, he's not calling me sweetheart because he thinks I'm sweet. So why is he calling me sweetheart? I think he's trying to subtly put me down. Do I think that every person who's ever called me sweetheart is trying to put me down? Absolutely not. Do I think sometimes that calling somebody honey or dear or kiddo can be a subtle way to put them down.
Oh,
yes,
sure, sure, sure. Well, so you said this then. The next one was, don't call her sweetie. Avoid diminutive nicknames like hun, baby, darling, girl, young lady, kiddo. It's condescending. We had a conversation here on this show the other day. Actually, it was a podcast I recorded with my colleague here, Steve Bertrand. And I believe the word sissy was used to... Was that the word that got one of us in trouble, Steve?
Sissy. Hissy. Don't throw a hissy fit.
Hissy fit, right. And then, which is maybe a derivation of sissy, but you said, I wouldn't use that. I think that's inappropriate. And I said, I didn't know that that word was in play now. And then, lo and behold, I read your piece and you make the same point.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't specifically point out the phrase hissy fit. I suspect that might be short for hysterical fit.
Yeah, right. Right.
And hysterical historically means that a woman's uterus is making her crazy. So it does kind of, we don't really say that men get hysterical, right? Hysterical is a gendered insult. So I didn't point that one out. I hadn't really thought of that one. But yeah, I mean, hearing it, it's the kind of phrase that is not applied to men as much as to women.
Oh, sure.
So I think when you find yourself using an insult that applies to one gender more than the other, that might be a hint that what's really bothering you about the person is their gender, not their behavior.
I think, you know, I think...
Right? I mean, if I cut you off in traffic, I'm being, what, a jerk? Sure. I'm being selfish. I'm being rude. I'm being inconsiderate. Am I being a B-word? I mean, only because I'm a woman. A man could do the exact same thing in traffic and you wouldn't call him that.
You didn't get called that. What was your point, Steve? Like,
well, I was just going to say about hysterical. You know, it's funny. I think it's how you're raised or where, because I never, ever... assigned a gender to that phrase until it was pointed out to me.
No, but I do see sissy as a pejorative, but, you know, a relatively harmless one. I've always seen...
Well, I don't think it's harmless.
Yeah.
I think that sissy is a way of saying that a man who does not fulfill these traits of masculinity, often applied to men who are suspected of being gay, are lesser than. And they're lesser than because they're fulfilling some kind of feminine trait. I don't think words are harmless. I recognize that there are a lot of words out there, and we don't all know the history of every word. And we
right.
Can't possibly
well, that's why I bring that point up. That's my point. I think that language is fungible, and we're all learning as we evolve. And I also wonder sometimes if in the process of trying to educate or guide, you don't, stand the chance of actually alienating the people that you're trying to help.
Well, let me say two things to that. First of all, the first time you say hissy fit and someone says that might be problematic, no problem. You get a free pass.
Yeah.
If you continue to say it in front of the people that said they thought it was problematic in a way that's derogatory to them, I think you're veering into the problem is no longer that you're saying a word. The problem is that you're saying something that you know is hurtful to somebody.
Yeah.
That's a different problem. That's the thing I have a problem with.
Well, and you make that point. You say, it's okay. You can apologize. Apology accepted later in your piece.
Yeah. I mean, actually, if you have a second to click over to my original Facebook post, there are a couple of things that I said in it that other people in the comments corrected me on, and I changed it in the post, and I left the edit visible.
I'm
going to just call attention to the fact that I said this originally. Somebody in the comments pointed out that was disrespectful. I agree with them. I won't say that again. But I didn't delete it because I thought, you know what? It's kind of weird to delete mistakes. It's kind of better to leave them public and show that you've reconsidered and leave yourself accountable to that.
I am out of time. You and I need to finish this conversation another day. But I just want to say this. So you go through and you have, 14 different points in the CNN version of the Facebook post. And one of them is give a female extra space after dark. And I think I knew, but maybe they didn't resonate clearly enough with me all of the time. I think it was just so helpful. And it builds. It actually gets better to the very final point you make about accepting discomfort. I think it's just so interesting and well done. And so props to you, Nicole. Thank you for sharing those observations.
Well, thank you so much for being willing to hear them and for inviting me on your show. It's a pleasure to speak with you and a real pleasure always to speak to people who are willing to at least reconsider something that they hadn't thought of before, which I think is all I can really ask of anybody ever. All any of us can ask is that you're open. So thank you.
Nicole Stamp, you can see her on the page one of CNN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Uh-huh.
Here's John Williams.
I'm going to count that as a plus one. Some of you may square that differently. It's 210. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We appreciate you tuning in. Remember, you can always call or text 312-981-7200. So this is nice to share with your sons or daughters, your friends and colleagues, this CNN piece by Nicole Stamp. She was on with us just before the news. And she said, here are things that men can do, that we all can do, but it's directed to men in response to the hashtag MeToo movement about everything from sexual harassment to sexual assault. Practice the phrase, hey, that's not cool, guys, when somebody says something that you all know is not appropriate. She said, be mindful how you introduce women. Yeah. And don't call her sweetie was number 6 on the list. She said on number 7, during sex, seek enthusiastic consent. No means no, and frozen silence also means no. She said, do not use gendered or misogynist insults. She said a bunch of words, including sissy and fairy, demean feminine traits. She said, free kids from rigid gender roles. Think about that. She writes more about it. 10, don't focus on little girls' looks. You see a little girl, often we will compliment her prettiness or cuteness. We don't do it to boys. It sends a signal to the girls and to the boys that isn't entirely healthy or appropriate. She said, number 11, give extra space after dark. If a woman is walking alone at night in a secluded area, please recognize she's probably nervous. And the list of things to be aware of goes on. There was a story that Bill and Wendy were talking about here on WGN Radio with your friend Steve Bertrand earlier today about the 12-year-old Highland, Illinois girl in her second battle with brain cancer at a St. Louis Children's Hospital. You know, Anthony Rizzo battled cancer as a child, beat it, and we all know what a great success story he is. So the mom was able to secure a photo of Anthony Rizzo, I guess as sort of motivation to the daughter. And then someone stole that photo from their hospital room. The girl's in there with round 2 of the cancer, not the treatment, the cancer. It's back. And they're fighting the good fight. And there's an autographed picture of Anthony Rizzo that was swiped. Jill Schrage is Abby's mom, and she joins us here on WGN. Hi, Jill. It's John Williams. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Really good. Is that story pretty accurate as I just told it?
Yes. Pretty on point.
You're a Cubs fan, are you?
Yes, I am. I was actually born up by Chicago in Kankakee, and so it's been in my blood and my family's blood as long back as I can remember. So, of course, I had to pass the tradition on to my kids.
Steve, were there some Schrages in your neighborhood? My buddy Steve is from the Kankakee area.
Yeah, I went to Bishop McNamara, but what's your maiden name?
I would have been Shear at the time.
Oh, Shear, yeah. I know Shears.
Well, so what are you doing in St. Louis, lady? You and those people got to get up here where the rest of the Cubs fans are. You're in Cardinal country.
We're a house divided. My husband is a Cardinal fan, and he actually kind of, you know, moved me down into this part of the state because he has a dairy farm down here. So we kind of just reside down here, but I definitely don't let it deter my Cubby pride.
So then how did you get the picture of Anthony Rizzo to your daughter?
Back in June, the end of May, June, I actually wrote to the Anthony Rizzo Foundation and let them know what was going on and didn't know if they could send her an autographed picture. And they actually responded back to us very quickly and were glad to send her a picture. And they've helped us out along the way as well. And, I mean, just with his struggles alone with childhood cancer, it's an inspiration to show my daughter that there is life after cancer. So
tell me about Abby.
She's a wonderful 12-year-old girl, loves music, loves the Cubs. She actually was a very smart girl, including completing 7th grade advanced math while doing cancer treatments. And, I mean, just tries her hardest to do as best as she can.
Tell me about her bout with the cancer. I understand she had it, she went through treatment, and then something came back. Is that right?
Yes. In April 2016, she was diagnosed with 2 germinoma brain tumors. And after 4 rounds of chemo and 25 rounds of radiation, in September of 2016, she was declared all clear. And so we were very thrilled. Actually, she went on a Make-A-Wish trip. We went to concerts, just trying to live up life as much as we could after that time in the hospital. And then in May of 2017, we went in for a routine scan, and it showed that her cancer had came back. And they said basically the only way to finish treating this is a bone marrow transplant. And we came in for it. Should have been routine bone marrow transplant, and she's had numerous issues at the whole entire time. So yeah. She's actually been in the PICU or the pediatric ICU for 28 days now.
So she's undergoing the treatment right now. You're in the hospital right now as we speak.
Yes, we are. Yeah, she's actually healing. She's already got the stem cells transplanted. She's engrafted. Her body's trying to heal itself. But we're still here because of other complications that have arisen along the way.
I see. What are they telling you and Abby about the treatment program right now?
Basically, right now, we're working at Abby's pace. As soon as she's able to kind of get up and move around, she's having some issues with talking and swallowing. But as soon as we kind of get those things hammered out, then she should be able to move to the oncology floor and then hopefully soon after home. So,
You're on speakerphone right now, are you, Jill?
Yes, I am.
No, it's a good phone. Abby, can you hear us? This is John Williams. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Hey.
Kind of sorry about I'm sorry how our Cubs did this fall, Abby. We were supposed to do better than that.
Yeah. Oh, well.
There's always next year, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's hard to repeat. I like our chances next year. Abby, are you with me on that?
Yep.
You know what we need to do is get you guys back up here for. Did you get to any games this year, Jill?
No, I have not. In fact, that's the only time I've seen the Cubs is over here at Busch Stadium. I've never actually made it to Wrigley, but it is a lifelong goal at some point. So.
No, it's not that far away. I'll bet we can help you with that.
No,
but
no. Oh,
you know, the reason we're all interested in discovering this story, I mean, we're interested because no child should have to go through this. No family should have to endure this. But then just to make things a little more painful, some knucklehead swipes the autographed Anthony Rizzo photo. When did you notice it missing?
It was Friday evening, about 5 o'clock. I had actually had her siblings up here visiting, and I pulled back the curtain to show them, oh, look at this, where I hung this. And it was not where I had to put it. So we scoured the room top to bottom, looked in every drawer, cabinet, and it was nowhere to be found.
Duh. Do they have security cameras? Can't we see somebody, an orderly or a passerby, somebody sneaking in and out?
They said they have security cameras out in the hallway, but none actually in the patient room. So, you know, we had left the room actually on Wednesday for a procedure. That's the only time that I know all three of us, me, Abby, and her father, were out of the room. Otherwise, the scary thought that comes to me is, did somebody come in while she was in here to take that, you know?
Yeah. So I don't even know what an autographed Anthony Rizzo photo is worth, but it can't be worth too much to somebody. It wasn't signed to them, and it's not $1,000. I mean, what a ridiculous thing to steal.
Well, absolutely. I kind of joked that, you know, being down here in St. Louis with the Cardinals, I didn't think a Rizzo autograph would be that valuable.
Yeah. Up here, I could get you something for it, but down there, no way. No way.
Exactly. We get all kinds of hard time when we wear our Cubs shirts and everything. We're like, hey, we're doing better than you guys this year. That's all we can ask.
So have you guys heard from Rizzo at all?
No, we haven't. See, I know we've had a lot of friends, family, people all over the place reach out to him for us, and we're very appreciative of that.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know more about this story than you do, and so I'm going to leave it at that for now. And let's you and I rendezvous again maybe later in the week. Tell us how your daughter is doing and healing. We're all going to send our best wishes and prayers for her full recovery. And wouldn't it be fun to be at a game maybe opening day next year? Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be astoundingly amazing.
Jill, we can make that happen. So let's put that on the calendar. You and Abby get out the calendar, look at the first game next year, and I'm going to make sure you guys have good seats to that game, okay?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much.
All right, Jill, stay in touch. I'll talk to you later this week, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you so much. Yeah, I was trying to say thank you to you as well.
Tell her to rest her voice. We'll visit with her next time, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Jill Schrage, and we'll let her go. you and I know more about that story than they do. And I'm going to let them get some good news tomorrow and make it a surprise, and then we'll catch up with them later in the week. Hey, Steve, what's going on in the newsroom?
Jeff Flake is speaking on the floor of the Senate, and they said essentially, heaven help us. This is a man announcing today he will not run for re-election, a Republican.
We were not made great as a country by indulging in or even exalting our worst impulses, turning against ourselves, glorifying in the things that divide us, and calling fake things true and true things fake. And we did not become the beacon of freedom in the darkest corners of the world by flouting our institutions and failing to understand just how hard-won and vulnerable they are. This spell will eventually break. That is my belief. We will return to ourselves once more, and I say the sooner the better. Because we have a healthy government, we must also have healthy and functioning parties. We must respect each other again in an atmosphere of shared facts and shared values, comity, and good faith. We must argue our positions fervently and never be afraid to compromise. We must assume the best of our fellow man and always look for the good. Until that day comes, we must be unafraid to stand up and speak out as if our country depends on it, because it does. I plan to spend the remaining 14 months of my Senate term doing just that. Mr. President, the graveyard is full of indispensable men and women. None of us here is indispensable. Nor were even the great figures of history who toiled at these very desks in this very chamber to shape the country that we have inherited. What is indispensable are the values that they consecrated in Philadelphia and in this place, values which have endured and will endure for so long as men and women wish to remain free. What is indispensable is what we do here in defense of those values. A political career does not mean much if we are complicit in undermining these values. I thank my colleagues for indulging me here today. I will close by borrowing the words of President Lincoln, who knew more about healthy enmity and preserving our founding values than any other American who has ever lived. His words from his first inaugural were a prayer in his time and are now no less in ours. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though passion may have strained, it must not break the bonds of our affection. The mystic chords of memory will swell when again touched, as surely as they will be, by the better angels of our nature. Thank you, Mr. President. I yield the floor.
Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona speaking today just after announcing that he would not run for re-election.
Why is he not going to run, Steve?
He's a fascinating character. In his speech, he said, "We did not become great by calling real things fake." Jeff Flake is a conservative in the traditional sense. In fact, he wrote a book that did very well just this fall about how what's happening now is not conservative, according to the traditional sense. He is being challenged on the right.
So was he not maybe going to win again in Arizona?
He was going to be tough. I mean, his numbers aren't great there. But remember when President Trump would go and speak in Arizona recently and he would call out Jeff Flake and say, "No one says I'm not supposed to mention his name. I'm not supposed to mention his name," you know, and it was really hard on him. This is one of the Republicans who Donald Trump went after and he was suffering for it. And now Jeff Flake, a thoughtful conservative, is hanging it up rather than run for re-election. Yeah.
And almost ironic. I mean, there he is saying, you know, the Republic depends on men of comity and enmity. And if he's won, he's bowing out. Better he stay and fight the good fight. The line I wrote down, you know, do whatever you want, Mr. Flake. I'm not here to have you live your life for me. But the line I wrote down was, this spell will eventually break. Oh, my God. How many of us are thinking that? We're in some sort of alternative universe. Alternate universe. It's like this cannot go on forever. This has to end. And I thought that was positively poetic and on point. This spell will eventually break. Steve, I got in your way there. Anything else?
No, that's just it's one of those. I know you were a big fan of The West Wing.
Yeah.
And
can you hear the music swelling?
That was a West Wing moment.
No.
I mean, this all came up. You know, the word of it just broke about a half an hour ago.
Well, and not to overstate the obvious, but he's a Republican. McCain's a Republican. I'm just thinking about some of the Republicans who the president needs to count on for anything.
Well, he'll still be around for 14 months. And
I know that, but I'm wondering how much support he's going to throw the president's way as a result of...
It's an interesting thing. You know, people are saying, well, Corker's not going to vote with the president. Well, I don't know that that's true. If these are men and women of character... and they're presented with voting on something that they believe in, I don't think
absolutely
they're going to vote no.
Correct.
Just because they don't like the president.
Right. Let's not cut off our nose. It's 2:25. I need to cut off this conversation. We'll pick it up in a minute on WGN.
We were not made great as a country by indulging in or even exalting our worst impulses and calling fake things true and true things fake.
There, Steve. You happy? Here's your West Wing treatment of Jeff Flake.
When reality sounds like fiction.
I was positively cheered by what he said. I want him to run for United States. Oh, wait. That's him saying he didn't want to be in that club anymore. But I was cheered because, you know, I mean, was it Corker who first said that the emperor has no clothes? We're all looking at each other going, okay, you know this guy's crazy, right? Yeah, I know he's crazy.
Corker was the first, yes.
To come out and say that. I mean, Democrats have been saying it and talk show hosts have been saying it, but... for members of the Republican Party in the United States Senate to publicly say it was a bit of a line in the sand, and he was the first to jump across.
Ben Sasse then issued a statement a little bit later after that, questioning whether the president was willing to uphold the Constitution or his oath.
I think some of them are dabbling in it, you know, or every now and then Mitch McConnell or somebody would say something, but then they would sort of rectify it. Lindsey Graham more than Mitch McConnell. Sometimes it's in defense of something, you know, like them punching back after the president punched them.
Well, Lindsey Graham's back in camp. I mean, he's golfing with the president and they're working together on different things.
So was Flake at that luncheon then that the president attended?
I would imagine he probably was. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know where you put this one in if you're assigning it. Is this a win or is it a loss? I mean, I think Senator Corker's calling the president untruthful today certainly would be a blow to the administration, but this might be what Donald Trump wants. I mean, he has been very critical of Jeff Flake. You know, Flake has been an outspoken, I want to say traditional conservative in the more historical sense, hasn't always gone the president's way. So
right.
this could work in President Trump's favor, but it certainly will not endear him to the other remaining Republican senators.
You think
he drummed him out.
Drummed Trump out for saying this?
That the president drummed Jeff Flake out.
Oh, yeah, right. Sure. Pardon me, Steve. Yeah, I get your point. Yeah. Well, but again, I'm just happy to see somebody in the Senate sort of acknowledge what you and I have been knowing and thinking and you look around and go, is it just me or is this like, this is cuckoo bananas. We're living in crazy town and the mayor of crazy town is Donald Trump. Doesn't anybody see that? Because people will call into the talk shows and write to the newspapers and they'll watch their Fox News. And there's that 46% of people who don't believe the media's coverage of the president. And there's that 70%+ of Republicans who still think the president is doing a good job. And so you're just kind of like going, wait a minute, this is nuts. And then a sitting member of the United States Senate of the president's own party says the things that you just heard. And in part said, the spell will eventually break. And I'm like, oh, your words to God, your lips to God's ears. You know, I don't even know what that means. I don't know how I want that executed. I don't know what I want to have happen for the spell to eventually break. I've given up on Donald Trump drinking the sane Kool-Aid, so I don't know how I get that. But at least somebody else is noticing that this is nuts. And that felt good today. One other political note, this of the Illinois variety. So here is, as you may know, Bruce Rauner is running for re-election. He's a Republican governor of Illinois. He's a Republican, right? Is it pretty sure about that?
Yeah,
yeah, that's in all the papers, isn't it? So then the commercial Steve, yeah, which you've got, Elif, I know, but I'm just trying to set this up. What do I need to say about the ad I'm
about
to
play? Yeah, so
it's
a commercial being put up on behalf of Governor Rauner. I don't know who's paying for it, but it's taking on Governor Madigan. And the
no,
way,
Speaker Madigan.
Speaker Madigan.
that was Freudian.
And the way they're doing it is by using all of the neighboring governors who are Republican.
So you have Scott Walker, you have Illinois, you've got Iowa,
Missouri,
Wisconsin, and Indiana.
Yeah, Governor Holcomb in Indiana.
Okay, so I can't, you know, this is not visual, but they are on screen, well lit, looking beautiful, and they're saying all of these things.
We want to say thank you.
Thanks, Mike Madigan.
Thank you.
For raising Illinois taxes.
For blocking Rauner's reforms.
And helping create new jobs in Indiana.
In Wisconsin.
In Missouri.
Our economy's on fire.
We're growing good jobs.
And we're growing union jobs faster than Illinois.
So we owe you.
Huge.
Hoosiers love you, Mike Madigan.
Cheeseheads love you, Madigan.
Big fans here in Missouri. Big time. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
That's all the Republicans.
That's brilliant.
That's all the Republican governors around our state thanking Mike Madigan in an ad for Bruce Rauner. But it's funny because Mike Madigan is not running for governor of Illinois, right?
No. But Governor Rauner's been running against Mike Madigan for years. I mean, that's what his ads have always been.
I guess so.
What's interesting to me is if I haven't listened too closely, but they seem to be using some President Trump words in that, you know, there was huge.
I noticed that, yeah.
There was big time.
Big time instead of bigly.
Right.
Well, we asked Speaker Madigan to join us to respond to that interesting criticism of his tenure in Illinois. And I guess he's in caucus right now. His spokesperson is Steve Brown, who's joined us before. Steve, it's John Williams. How are you this afternoon?
Well, first, John, welcome back to Illinois as a former Saluki, and I'm glad to have you back in the state.
Yeah, I am too. I really am. Yeah. I missed y'all. In fact, that's what I was doing. I was laboring away in the beautiful state of Minnesota where they have a $2 billion cash surplus, and I thought, I want to get back to Springfield, Illinois, and lock arms with Rauner and Madigan and be part of all of these conversations. I missed it.
Well, we're happy to have you back and happy to have your input, as they say.
Yeah. So when did you see the spot?
I saw it last night. I think somebody, you know, in the media had obtained a copy, passed it along. It's interesting because, of course, it highlights the failures of Governor Rauner over the last several years. And then it comes from leaders of states where the average working family wage is $5,000 to $10,000 below Illinois. So many people have accused Governor Rauner of trying to make Illinois into West Indiana, Eastern Missouri, whatever you might want to do directionally. That's been resisted because in a number of ways, despite some of the bumps and rough times we've had, Illinois is a much better place to be.
Well, I guess the question, I mean, the ad sort of begs the question, who's responsible for the things that these other governors are touting? You know, they've got balanced budgets, they've got better jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So
well, they may or they may not. That's a whole other story. But what we do know is the undisputed that the incomes of working families in Illinois, $5,000 to $10,000 on average, better than any of those surrounding states.
Say that again?
So that's incomes, average incomes, working families. Better in Illinois by $5,000 to $10,000 than the states those governors represent. So let's begin from that point of what's good or bad.
Well, Steve and I were kind of chuckling at the ad. I think people will when they get it. They'll go, oh yeah, I get it.
Sure.
But I wonder what the sort of wisdom of that is. If Bruce Rauner becomes the governor again and Mike Madigan is still the speaker, they're all still going to have to play nice down in Springfield. I wonder if an ad like this will have a residual impact that will make it, once again, difficult for the two of them to do the job for the rest of us.
Yeah, and really, you have a year between now and the actual election, more than a year between now and the time the winner of that election takes office. So I don't know whether it's playing nice or just off by, or acting like adult, whether or not we can get anything done over the next 14 or so months. The speaker has pledged to work professionally and cooperatively with the governor. That's what we've been trying to do. In some cases, we've gotten some things done. In other cases, we've not gone as far as perhaps the governor wants. So he you know, he's an up-your-all kind of guy. And so that's where the dilemma's been. The problem is we had a two-and-a-half, almost three-year budget stalemate that nearly crushed universities all over the state. And how do you build prosperity if you're not funding the universities? That was a very curious thing. And as this ad, let's go back to the ad, the purpose of this interview. It points to the things Rauner has failed to do. Now, blame Madigan. But I don't know that you want to blame Madigan for, say, not changing workers' compensation, where the biggest part of that is our salaries or wages that are made up through the system to injured workers. So should we make workers' comp cheaper by taking money away from injured workers and their families? I think people would say no. That's what they've said so far.
Yeah, but I've heard people say that actually it's out of balance in Illinois, that equation. Do you agree?
Part of the balance is the fact that salaries are better in Illinois. So to bring workers' compensation costs down to, say, Indiana, you'd have to bring down the wages of workers when they're injured. I don't think people so far have not been persuaded that's a terrific idea.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the strategy behind this ad. So they've got all of these other Republican governors saying, thanks, Mike Madigan, right? They're saying, thanks, Mike Madigan, for pulling all of these jobs back to the neighboring states. But Bruce Rauner is the governor of Illinois, so he's...
They're kind of insulting, him in this process. Now, maybe they've calculated that this makes a lot of sense.
No, I know. I'm just thinking about that. I mean, so at the end of the day, what's like the residual effect of that? You go, yeah, what's our governor been doing? Why are all these governors got big smiles on their faces? Maybe, maybe that's not such a clever ad after all. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I think it highlights the failings of what he's tried to do. And again, it's in states where the quality of family wages, family income is far less than what we have.
I don't know. I met some people.
It's kind of important. Go ahead.
No. Finish that thought. I was
going to throw in a quick thought that where people are cooperating, where there just was a plan that was put together by everybody, including Rauner and Madigan, Rahm Emanuel, Tony Preckwinkle, all the legislative leaders, John Cullerton, is this effort to try and woo the Amazon 2 headquarters to our state, probably to the Chicagoland area. So they can cooperate. You know, it's not like they're at loggerheads on every topic. So there is some cooperation that goes on. People sometimes forget that because it's not, as you and I all know, not as sexy as the back and forth and the finger pointing and stuff like that.
I was talking to a member of the U.S. Congress about that very thing the other day. She said, actually, we get along fine. You would be surprised how well members of the House work together across the aisle. It's not as bad as you think. By the way, Steve Bertrand's in our newsroom. Jump in here, Steve.
Hey, Steve, can I jump in on a different topic here while you two are speaking?
No, I'm going to say no. Yeah, go ahead, jump in.
This is how magic Steve Brown is, John, because as he was speaking, I got a statement email from him. And it looks like the speaker is on board and is going to push this Daniel Biss plan to require all lobbyists, legislators, people who work in legislative offices to undergo sexual harassment training. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, we already have a training policy and sexual harassment policy in place for all members of the General Assembly, the staff who works for the speaker, people like myself. And we're going to try and step that up because of some of the questions that have been raised in recent days. We're also going to broaden it to include lobbyists who are an element of this process here in Springfield, and so that they would have to undergo training. They would have to have a sexual harassment policies as part of their overall incorporation or whatever however their business is set up.
But is this Daniel Biss's bill? I mean, because he's not always been on your team.
It goes in the same direction. I saw this morning Senator Biss and his running mate, Representative Wallace, talk about a plan. In to be fair to all, there is a plan in place. Each member of the General Assembly, or at least each member of the House, has a personal kind of code. They sign off on it. The staff is trained in that area. there are probably more training can be done. That's one of the things we're going to do. And when we're going to expand this requirement to folks who lobby the legislature. So it is I don't know that Senator Biss has actually introduced a bill as I sit here and talk to you guys right now.
Yeah, but Steve, he said he was going to do it today. I mean,
I understand.
Okay.
We had a caucus, and one of the topics of the caucus was to discuss. There have been reports in the last several days about concerns that people have voiced about conduct, the sexual harassment, and this is an attempt in the House to address it. So it word for word what Dan Biss is. I'm not trying to pick a fight with Dan Biss or Dan Biss.
Sure, I'm just saying
here's what we're going to be doing.
Okay. Yeah, well, it was a hell of a headline in the Tribune today. More than 100 women and men in Illinois politics signed an open letter admitting that they've been sexually harassed since starting the job. Ro Khan with Anna DeVlantis have strolled into our studio. I'm watching Twitter. And
that's dangerous.
Somebody said, this is quite a speech, flake in a bombshell Senate speech. Mr. President, I rise to say enough. That's why I asked you off the air, Ro, what was the, who said the, have you no decency, sir, to Senator McCarthy? I don't remember who that was, but I think we can remember Flake for having said, Mr. President, I rise to say enough. He said that soon this, how did he put it? Here's the quote. The spell will eventually break. Oh, that's good, too. But he also said he's not going to run for re-election and that he's discouraged with what's happening to this country.
Yeah. This is a really unique day in the history of America. I know we say that a lot, but today really is, because the Republican Party... There are members of the Republican Party who are walking away from their jobs. Now, I happen to think that this is not a good plan. I think that they should stand in there. But I think what they're acknowledging here is that the Republican Party now has a different mode of operation. Republicans to get voted by rural and ex-urban voters en masse. I mean, we're talking about numbers in the 80s and 90s in those geographic regions. They need to play into the Trumpian populism. Mm-hmm. And these are guys, many of them have been there a long time, done a lot of public service, get that it's one thing to campaign. It's one thing to rah-rah certain ethics or political positions. But to actually do the job of governance, which is what they're sent to go do, unless they tear the whole thing down, and they're not going to do that.
You don't think the pendulum is swinging their way, that it's going to meet
them?
Oh,
it is definitely swinging toward populism. There's no question about it. These guys are getting out of the way, which really gives the center will not hold right now.
Huh.
You're going to have the far right and the far left, and you're going to have this combination of, where politics is flipping around. It's exactly what enemies of the United States of America all over the world, including the Russians, have hoped for and prayed for. We're disintegrating as a political institution.
I was encouraged by what he said, Ro. I mean, Anna, when I heard it, I don't think
he's leaving.
Somebody thought it was powerful.
I know. I want him to stay and fight the good fight. I want him to.
But this isn't a guy who's been silent either. He wrote a book explaining why he thought Trump was not good for the country. He's been outspoken, and now it seems that, yeah, he's not polling well against his competitor in Arizona. So he's like, look, I'm stepping aside. But he did it saying that the traditional conservatives who believe in limited government, free markets, those kinds of principles that have guided the party for so many years, no longer fit. They don't fit in this vision of America anymore. So
right.
I'm stepping aside, which is to your point, Ro, that...
Now, where do you
there
get?
There you go.
And business people, have pushed the agenda of conservative economic philosophy for a very good reason. Because if the state is broke and just taxes, businesses want to leave, and it's expensive to go leave and to move on. And they don't want that. And, you heard Bruce Rauner was on this show last week talking about how when he's dealing with people who are making their decision to whether or not to park their money in Illinois, they have concerns about that, especially in the Chicago area, because even though we've got, it's a great place to have a business, it is also it's not a great tax environment for them.
No.
By the way, the person you are thinking of is Joseph Nye Welch. who was the chief counsel for the United States Army while it was under investigation for communist activities by the McCarthy folks. The McCarthy Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, and it was that's when he said, "At long last, have you left no sense of decency? Have you left no sense of decency?
Have you left no sense of decency? Mm-hmm. It's a great line. I don't remember the name. You remember McCarthy, but that's a classic. Okay, have a really good show, you guys.
Thank you.